Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim.
Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMO Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to have join us Nick Damiano. He's a serial entrepreneur and focused on solving unmet needs to improve patient care. He currently is the CEO and founder of Andromeda Surgical, and which is developing autonomous robots for safer, better, and more efficient surgery. And he has some great lessons he's learned as an entrepreneur and as a leader. Looking forward to today's conversation with Nick. Well, Nick, could you give us just a little bit of your career history, a little bit of your story?
Yeah, so I came out of Stanford initially as a generalist engineer and got into the medical device space. Worked for a few startups and then decided to go on my own as a founder and met up with a couple of guys through a meetup.com meeting that led to my first company, which was called New Rep, working on basically telepresence for the operating room. So allowing medical device reps or other physicians possibly to support cases in the operating room remotely instead of being there physically in the hospital, and built the first product for that. I was the co-founding CTO and took that from basically nothing through a product that was launched commercially, got it into a few hospitals with a few companies. And then eventually the company after I left was rebranded as Avail Med Systems and ended up raising, I think, over 100 million by now. And it's in, I think, at least a few hundred hospitals. And then left that company to found my second company, which is called Zenflow, which I led as the CEO and co-founder for about 8 years. And we were developing a device for enlarged prostate, BPH, an implantable device. And for that, took that from being one of the co-inventors through basically multiple stages of clinical trials and commercial readiness, then handed it off to a team to get it the rest of the way last year, and then started a new company this year called Andromeda Surgical. And I'm just about 2 months into that. We're working on autonomous robots for surgery, starting with some procedures in urology. So third time founder, and I'm excited to be back at it again for another go.
Yeah. Definitely would love to hear more about your company, and we'll definitely revisit that. But if you're able to go back and talk to a 22-year-old Nick and give him some advice with all you've been through in your career, what advice would you give him?
I think I would have taken more risks even earlier. And it sounds crazy because I've been taking a crazy number of risks and been a founder three times and, you know, was never sure it was going to work out. I think I come from a family that was really traditional careers, academics, doctors, things like that, and thought I had to kind of follow the traditional path to some extent in the beginning, even though I was in the startup world. I think I would have probably gone outside of that and just worked on whatever was most interesting and just followed my passions as far as trying to build towards something that's 20 years in the future.
So talk about just some of the work that you're doing currently with the robotics and operating room, and talk a little bit about that and just the company. I know you're new into it, but it sounds like an exciting venture.
Yeah, so I've always been kind of a futurist and interested in the latest technology, and I've been really keen on robotics and AI for a long time. I think, though, as somebody who was schooled in Stanford Biodesign, I'm also really focused on clinical needs. And so having worked in the urology world for the last 8 years and met lots of urologists, just seen lots of needs that I think are unmet, I found a few places where this seemed like a really great solution, where an autonomous robot that has not just robotics that can help physically assist the surgeon, but also AI that helps them make better decisions and plan better and just avoid mistakes, seemed like a great fit for some of these procedures. So I do think this is going to be the future of surgery, where robots will be a lot smarter and work in tandem with surgeons to produce better outcomes. and kind of match that long-term vision up with this clinical need of this urology procedure we're starting with that we thought could just be a lot better and produce a lot of value for patients with a solution like this. So just 2 months in now, and we're trying to move fast, building things, building robots, working on algorithms, and hopefully we'll have something interesting to show within a few more months.
Okay, very cool. So when thinking back to that first time that you were asked to lead a team, what are some things we have a lot of our listeners, our first-time leaders or first-time CEOs, what are some things that you wish you would have known earlier about a leading teams?
Yeah, and I definitely made a lot of mistakes along the way and had a lot to learn about leadership. I think one thing as a founder and really type A person that likes to move aggressively and just get stuff done as fast as possible, I think I was too demanding on employees in some of my early leadership experiences and thought that everybody could just go at 110% all the time for years on end. Realize that people need some balance, that people need to have things in their life outside of work. It's not always going to be their sole focus for 100% of their waking hours. So you need to find that balance and make sure people are mentally healthy and happy and not burned out. And if you play that marathon, if you run that marathon instead of the constant sprinting, then you can get better long-term results, even if it feels like you're leaving something on the table in the short term.
So you've worked with a number of startup CEOs. What are some of the common things that you see as far as mistakes that they make as far as they're starting a new role?
Yeah, for startup CEOs, I think, yeah, that what I just mentioned is one for sure. I mean, founders tend to be aggressive. They tend to want everybody else to be founder-like, and it's great to some extent, but not sustainable in the long term for a big team. I think as far as just focusing on the wrong things, as far as what's going to drive progress and what's going to build value for the company, that a lot of people get caught up in the glamour of being a startup CEO or the experience, the things that are peripheral to the core mission. The best thing you can do really is make progress, and it may not be flashy and you may not get all the exciting press and but that's really what drives you to succeed, is to actually getting things done. And for fundraising too, people think they need to spend all their energy out talking to investors, but a lot of the time, if you go and actually build real value, that's the best way to raise funding too. So getting the investors interested, it's not always just being out there on the fundraising trail. It's putting your head down, getting stuff done, and then coming to them with something that's worth investing in.
So I think that probably is one of the things that most CEOs, especially in a startup venture, that they're spending quite a bit of time as far as talking with investors. What are some things that you've learned about raising funds that you think is important for somebody to know before going into that situation?
Yeah, one thing besides building value and having something worth investing in is with funding rounds, you need to plan long term, and you need to make every investor understand why not only is this a good company to invest in, but this is a good company to invest in now, that this is the round they want to be in. If the investor thinks that you're going to raise another round in 2 years with a lot of de-risking done at only a 20% higher valuation, then they're probably going to wait till that point to come in. They can get a lot better read on the company. And a lot of investors are pretty risk averse, even though it seems like the nature of VC to take risks. There is a lot of risk mitigation they want to do. And that goes hand in hand with also people raising on valuations that are unrealistic. Everybody wants to not give up equity in the company, which of course makes lots of sense. But especially in this market, I see lots of founders raising on valuations that maybe would have held up in 2021, but we're not in the same climate now. And to save a few percent of their company, they're really handicapping their chances of even getting the round raised. And it's tough to see that. I like to, in those kinds of cases, I'll just take the valuation hit, give up a few more percent of the company, and just get the round closed and keep moving fast. I mean, that's the way to build value. It's not trying to save every little percent of the company now.
So as you were building out, and you built out teams before, and I'm sure some that you've inherited in the past, but also built from scratch, your first kind of that executive team, what are some things that you look for that you think is important for somebody as they're in that situation of figuring out, okay, who are the right people to fit into the organization?
Yeah, I mean, conventionally people look for skill set and they have a job description and they have a bunch of requirements and it's usually too many requirements. They want to check off every box in the person they hire, and we'll often hire the person who checks the boxes. But one thing that I found is more and more important is just cultural fit and alignment with the mission. And I've made the mistake in the past of hiring people that were just outstanding on paper, but then were not culturally aligned. And in the end, it doesn't really work. That you really need to be shooting for the same goal and have the same vision for what the company should be. And if you don't do that, then you're going to be at odds. And I've put a lot of time into just making sure that this person we're hiring is the right fit. I mean, it's worth your time to invest in checking references, having more conversations, getting to know the person outside of work, you know, what motivates them in their lives, and just making sure for key hires, and you can't do this for every hire. You can't have, you know, every junior engineer or whatever in a 100 person company. You're not going to be able to have the time to do this. But for key people, you absolutely have to put in the time and make extra sure it's the right fit.
Talk a little bit about the importance of having mentors. I'm sure you've had some, and sometimes mentors are not people that are close to you, but maybe people that you follow or read or have had influence on your life. But any that the importance of that as far as a leader?
I mean, it's definitely been a key aspect of my career growth has been driven by a lot of great mentors along the way. If you're looking for individual people, then yeah, I think a few of the communities I've been part of are run by some really phenomenal people. When you talk about Stanford Biodesign, when I was there as a fellow, I mean, people like Paul Yock or Todd Brinton, there's many others too that I'm not mentioning here, were incredibly helpful in guiding my focus on medical innovation. I really liked being part of Y Combinator, and I actually signed up to do Y Combinator for a second time. I think I'm the first second time medtech founder to do it. And you know, the wisdom of people like Paul Graham and Jessica Livingston, and now a friend of mine from before she was at YC, Serbi Sarna, who's a great entrepreneur. I'm working with her now, and she's incredibly helpful as well. Another medtech entrepreneur who's been through the trenches. I think in general, people that have gotten to the point you want to get to, that's really the people you want to align yourself with. People that have achieved what you want to achieve, people that have fought the battles for longer than you have, and just seen a lot. I mean, it's amazing how much you see, even at 12 years as a founder, that people like that can really offer a lot as a mentor. So I'd recommend cultivating those relationships and making sure you have people like that are invested in your success.
So every CEO that I talk to keeps up with trends, what's going on in their industry, but also looks at as far as how do I grow as a leader. Any books that you would recommend to leaders that have had an impact on you?
Yeah, and there's books that are, I think, that are relevant to being a founder, and there's other books that are relevant to being a leader. So when you talk about being a founder, I mean, just reading other stories like Founders at Work, I think Jessica Livingston from YC wrote that. That's one good kind of summary of case studies. Then as far as a leader, I really like High Output Management by Andy Grove. That's informed a lot of my philosophy and just how you think about leadership. And when you're a CEO of, in his case, I mean, it's Intel, it's a big organization, but for a startup too, where you spend your time and where you can get the most leverage, that concept of leverage of I can spend a half hour, an hour here and make this person a lot more productive for the next week. I mean, that kind of thing really shapes how I operate as a leader myself.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. I actually read that book years ago and just had a new copy sent to me. I think I had given it to somebody and started reading that again. That's a great book. Definitely has some great concepts around management and things that he'd learned. Any quotes that you refer to?
Yeah, one I go back to, and it really embodies my mentality and has for many years. And this was at my Stanford graduation, I think it was in 2005 at Stanford graduation that this quote originated, was "Stay hungry, stay foolish" from Steve Jobs. And that really, since then it stuck with me since hearing that live in person that day. And I really see as somebody now as a third time founder and consider myself still very hungry as much as I was with the first company. And I think the stay foolish part too, just being willing to take risks and do things that are outside of the conventional wisdom or what you think you should do. That's really been a helpful guiding concept. And then I think this quote's also from him, but it said something, and I may get this wrong, but people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do. I mean, that's also something, I think again, it's like you have to go beyond the conventional wisdom and what people think is possible if you want to do things that are big and new.
I don't think I've asked this question of anybody, so I'll throw it to you and see if you have an answer. So what are some habits that you do now that you wish you would have done earlier?
It's a good question. Yeah. I mean, I think being more careful with time and just diligent about doing things that are high value. I mean, it's great. And there's things that I like doing, like helping out other founders that are early in their career. It's just so rewarding, but you have to avoid having that stuff eat too much into your time. So being more deliberate about your days and, okay, this day is focused on this task. This day, I'm not going to have meetings. I'm just going to work and get stuff done. And, you know, another day I'm going to have meetings, but I need to focus on these primary goals, this one or two things. That's key, is what are the key things you're trying to accomplish, your top one to three things, and making sure that you're just super focused on those. And then also, I think one more thing that's kind of the flip side of that is finding some balance in your life. That I've made the mistake, even with myself, I realized I did have a point, even though I thought I was unstoppable and keep going and work just all day and all night forever, you get burned out, and everybody does. I don't think anyone's that much of a robot or machine. They can just keep going for years and years on end. So finding the balance and being able to box off time, like now I have two kids and I set days where, you know, I'm not going to have any calls on this Saturday or something. I'm just going to take the kids out and we're going to have fun, and I'm not going to do any work stuff whatsoever. To find that balance and that time away is also really key for just your sanity and mental health.
Well, this kind of leads into the next question, is outside of work, what do you do to recharge? And it sounds like with work and family, you probably don't have a lot of extra time. But what are some things that you enjoy doing outside of work?
Yeah, the kids are key. I mean, interacting with kids in general is a whole different thing from working in the startup world. I mean, it's just so much different, and it's lets you kind of be silly and almost be a kid yourself in some ways. And it's just a great break from the day-to-day hustle. So that's one thing I like. I mean, I like to run a lot. I do a lot of running, and it's a good time to think. And a lot of great ideas come from long runs around San Francisco, which is where I live, and just exploring. And now this also kind of ties in with the kids. I've always been somebody that likes to explore new things, see new places, do new things. And now my 7-year-old especially has really gotten into that interest. So we'll take time to go and just see something new. Like a few weeks ago, we did a over 20-mile kind of walk run together. And I was pushing her in the stroller most of the time, where we had a bunch of things in the city that we hadn't seen, that we found, that we wanted to see. And we were able to cover all of them in a day. And that was just incredible and so much fun.
Ah, that's great. So what parting advice would you give a new or up and coming leader?
Yeah, I'd say, I guess there's different advice for a new leader and someone who's more experienced. it's interesting what you learn about being an experienced person as you get more experience. But one thing I'd say is that people, as they gain more experience, it's easy to be a prisoner of your own experience. And I found as I was looking for this third startup that I felt a lot more constrained than what I thought was possible. It's easy to say no to certain things and say, okay, this is not possible for this way. And when you're a first-time founder, I think people will advise you not to do certain things because they think it's impossible or that's been tried before or something. I'd always say to go back to first principles and think from your own point of view and what you know, and filtering other people's advice through your own filter from first principles. Is this thing doable? Not to be constrained by what people tell you is impossible. Don't be dissuaded from a big vision. I mean, you want to be realistic and not do things that actually are impossible, but go back to the first principles and come to your own conclusion. Don't be trapped by what you hear from others or what things that have burned you in the past.
Yeah, great advice. Well, I definitely have enjoyed our conversation. Wish you continued success in your new venture. It's going to be exciting to see kind of how your product evolves, and definitely wish you the best in all that you're doing.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, this is really fun. And yeah, hopefully you hear a lot from us before too long. Just heads down building, trying to make it happen. So we'll see where it goes.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.